This podcast is brought to you by Refix, a natural and organic isotonic drink containing 78 sea minerals. It's available on Amazon UK now, and it's heading to the shelves of all major health food retailers and pharmacies soon. Oh, that is nice.
It is nice. It's really good, though, because when I was talking to the guys at Refix, it kind of marries very well with our brand, because not only is it replacing like your normal kind of sugary isotonic drinks with something that's all natural after training, but also for like things like hangovers.
Important like, for our clients.
Yeah, super important for our clients.
Because a lot of them are hungover.
They love
they
drinking
come into the gym.
And training.
The flavors are good. That one we've just had now, what is it?
That one's orange and they've got lemon. And then they're bringing out Extreme Hydration, which is mixed with coconut water as well as seawater, because they get the minerals that would normally be added in to a...
Floating around in the sea.
Exactly. They just pull
78 of them.
It's filtered very, very well.
And it's the Spanish sea as well. So...
The cleanest.
Special sea. And also, they do things to help the planet. They do regular beach cleans. They help tidy up our oceans. It's just a great drink and great people. So we're happy to be partnering with them for this podcast.
Our lovely listeners can buy Refix with a little discount, can't they, George?
They can. It is BTL15. And you type that into the discount code on the Refix website and you get 15% off.
That is BTL15.
Refix. Seawater. Sea hydration. Extra slurps. Is that how you drink all the time?
Super slurpy.
Hey, I'm Dave Hasty.
I'm George Ashwell.
I'm Josh Betteridge.
And I'm Georgia Kennebun. And we are Before the Lights.
We work with actors and teams behind the scenes in film, TV and sport to keep their mental and physical health ticking over on and off screen.
On this podcast, we talk to some of them about how they get the most out of their mind and body and everything in between. Welcome back. This week, we have the wonderful Lauren Lyle on the podcast. She talks about her roles in Outlander and her new Netflix show, Toxic Town. She also talks about her new twins, her two BAFTAs that she won at the Scottish BAFTAs, and the fact her dad had the best time ever while he was there. And she's also a fellow podcaster. She has a podcast called She's a Wreck, and you can also listen to that where you listen to this. I can't wait for you to listen to it. Have a great time.
Without further ado,
here he is.
That's my. It's a catchphrase.
It's not a catchphrase. And yours is not that original.
You coined that.
It's not that original.
Wow. That's right.
Without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Lauren Lyle.
Woo! Thank you. This is quite funny, isn't it?
It is quite funny. That's what everyone says because it's just not the environment you've ever seen us in.
No, yeah.
You're being interviewed by the.
It feels like
you
I'm up for a job.
No one's wearing shorts.
No,
I'm in lycra still.
Oh, there, Georgia
keeping
is fully
gym.
That's
nice keeping it comfortable.
She's
as well.
Fresh from the gym.
Yeah, but that makes me feel more comfortable. Good. Like I know who you are.
But you've dressed up for it.
This is sort of my whole day. This is my day to night wear.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
But you have to do the whole
different
the variations whole of who you are.
I like
are.
It. It's smart. It's thank casual. You. It's cool,
cool as well, though.
It's very cool.
Boots.
Cool.
I love the boots.
It's very cool. Should we just evaluate everyone's outfits?
No.
That's what we're pivoting into fashion. The gym was boring, now we're in fashion. I'll continue introducing you because that probably makes more sense. Listeners of the podcast will know you from such roles as Marcelly in
well
Outlander.
Done. Yeah, no one ever gets the name correct.
Your name in its entirety, my dear. I cannot marry you without it.
Marcelly Jean McKimmy.
Marcelly. Marcelly. Lovely.
For the love of God, Father, are we to stand here havering about my name? Or do you intend to marry me?
I was always told it's Marcelly, like parsley.
There you go.
Tell you who pronounces like parsley. I think Josh Betteridge pronounces parsley.
Yeah, he isn't here today to defend himself, but he calls it parsley.
He also says business.
What, in a cool way?
Not
or
in
just
that, not in that term, but he says business.
Business. Okay.
Of course he does.
Also known as Karen Peary in the detective series of the same name, or most recently as a double BAFTA winner.
Oh, yeah, she is. Is this the first?
That?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, eh?
A new mother. Yeah.
Talk about all the time.
Yeah, they were just calling them the twins.
The twins.
My dad's now calling
twins.
Them the twins as well. Yeah. It was, when I got them, there was a moment where I was holding one. You like go into a winner's room. When you go into the room, you're in a state of shock, holding an award, and then they kind of, you come into this quite quiet, weird room, and they're like, hi, yeah, hope you're okay, like, you must be so shocked, and you're like, yeah, and they make you sign something as you come in, and they're just like, just sign this here, and you're like, what the fuck am I saying?
What was that?
It's a waiver to say you're happy to be recorded, and then they hand you a glass of champagne. So you're holding with a glass of champagne and the baby, and then like having a nice time. And then someone was like, oh, we need to get both the awards, because this is the second time I'd won that night. And I was like, yeah, no, get the second award. So I sat there in a state of shock, like tanking champagne, and someone comes in with the other award, and it was like two nurses trying to like show a new mum how to hold the two twins. So it was like, I don't know how to hold
them.
So
you're going to take the champagne out of your hand. Like, that's very normal.
Yeah. Take the champagne here. And then I found myself like, what is that? Like, shake, like,
literally nursing them. Yeah. Is that something you just do around the house now?
Yeah, and they're in quite a cupped shape, so you have to be careful where you hold them against
how often do you just go and pick them up?
Well, a friend of mine asked me, I had a party, Christmas party, and then some, I think it was one of you guys, said, did you have a BAFTA party?
I mean, from the footage from the night on your Instagram, it looked like you were having a BAFTA party.
Yeah.
Everyone was just, yeah.
Of course, so they should.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you should.
Absolutely.
Quite right. Yeah. But someone afterwards said, were you not nervous about other people's hands being on them? And I was like, okay. I don't mind. I haven't thought about it. But now maybe I will.
Yeah,
be.
Now.
You have a little bottle of sanitizer next to them.
Yeah, they just sort of sit on the mantelpiece looming over me. And so people have told me that they should go into being bookends, which I think
that's a good shout. Yeah. I'm going to point out, just in case anyone wasn't listening at the start, we're not actually talking about babies.
No, babies should be
wildly irresponsible. Where are the twins? Yeah, bookends on that shelf. Very ineffective from what I know about babies.
Useless bookends.
They do nothing. They have no personality whatsoever.
Continuing the intro, which is it's going on for a while, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good.
So, had several conversation breaks so far. You also host your own podcast called She's a Wreck.
I do.
You're an experienced host, yeah, so you can just take over. Yeah, you can just take over from us.
Oh, from you guys?
In this podcast.
Yeah. Nah, this is, I'm sitting back. It's quite weird, like, being in the opposite side of the chair. Like, it's not my responsibility if this goes wrong.
In She's a Wreck fashion, don't you make everyone introduce themselves as well?
Yeah.
So go for it.
Well, I normally am like, tell us your story.
Tell us your story. Who are you?
What's my story? I'm from Scotland, from Glasgow. I lived there till I was about 15, and then I moved to New Zealand and didn't know I wanted to be an actor. Was just sort of like typical, loved school plays and was a bit mad and loved the attention. And I would like come up with ideas for the plays. And I just remember feeling like overwhelmed joy whenever I got to be on stage. And so apparently, I only know this now, but when I moved to New Zealand, my drama teachers, who were cool, went to my mum and dad and said, if she shows any sign of like wanting to do this, you should like let her explore it. So when we got to New Zealand, I'd been at like quite a school where you wore kilts and blazers and stuff like that. And I went to New Zealand and there was a school that I ended up going to that I convinced my mum and dad to let me go to, which didn't have a uniform. You're only there when you had a class. It had an amazing drama department, all this sort of stuff. And now I look back, I'm like, I was 15 and I like made mum and dad go to this weird open day of the school that all the people that I'd got to know called the drug school because it was like artsy. Turns out it was just like artsy. Yeah.
Just different.
It was just different.
Yeah, yeah.
I moved back to the UK after finishing school there.
So you did a decent chunk of time there then?
Yeah, finished school.
Do you do a Kiwi accent?
I always do my friend Paddy's mum. Jo, she's Lauren's sweetheart. Lauren, it's just wonderful how well you're doing. It's always Lauren's sweetheart.
I just like when they say fush and chops.
Fush and chops.
Fush and chops.
Fush and chops. Yeah, fish and chips.
It's a funny accent.
Like Taika Waititi's got a great one.
Yeah.
It's a fish and chips, bro. Yeah. I never got the accent so much. I did, but the lingo, they'd always be like, oh, yeah, shop, bro. And I'd be like, everyone
getting
saying shot.
Did it take a while to get used to just being there? Because 15 is quite...
Yeah. My friend, who's still my best mate, has pulled me aside when I first moved. And it was literally the first day of school, like being in an American film where you're stood at the front of the class and they're like, this is Lauren, she's new from Scotland, all the way on the other side of the world. And everyone's like, where's that? And this one girl was assigned as my buddy. And then this other chick was like, oh, no, I want to be her buddy. And the teacher was like, okay, yeah, fine, whatever. And now she's my best friend still, but she pulled me aside and was like, you need to slow down and like speak properly because no one thinks that you speak English. So I think my accent would have been really strong at that point.
Yeah.
It's definitely chilled out.
And also they're just not used to hearing a Scottish accent,
no,
for sure.
But they all claim to be Scottish Kiwis.
Yeah, there's plenty of Scottish heritage.
Oh, really?
But then it'll be like 1/60th.
Yeah, yeah. How did you even do that maths?
Who's told you that?
Yeah.
I mean, we had the same thing when we moved to Kuwait.
Oh, yeah?
Because me and my twin sister moved from Scotland as well. And people would just laugh for like no reason when we were talking, we'd be like, what the fuck are they laughing about?
Did you ever get like, because were you, you were like Georgia from Scotland?
Oh, yeah, we were the Scottish twins.
Like, yeah,
Scottish twins. Even now, people are like, are you Scottish? I'm like, I'm not actually Scottish.
You do sound it, though.
Georgia's lived at about 400 places.
We've moved around, but you bring out the Scottish in me.
Yeah, every time I'm like, weird, you are Scottish. Like,
weird.
I don't get it. Well, they all found it dead weird and really interesting. And it was like my thing. I was like, that was my thing, being Scottish. And then I kind of finished school. I was like, cool, I'm going to try to be an actor. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'll try
to
drama.
Did you come to London on your own?
Yeah. So I think I was 19 and I moved to do a theatre. I got into this theatre company. I tried to get into drama school, didn't get in. I got into this like theatre company. So I moved for that and I was like, cool, I'm in London. And I like lived in Wood Green in this rubbish, like horrible street, followed home regularly. But I was like, no, I'm in London, like I'm doing the thing. Mm-hmm. I basically just went through the motions of like for years, auditioning for drama schools, working like a million jobs, trying to be an actor, meeting this person, meeting that person, and finally got an agent, like a small agent. And then my first audition and first job was the Old Vic, was doing The Crucible at the Old Vic.
Oh, cool.
Which is like, I couldn't believe it. It was the same year my mum was like, finally. I mean, do you think there's like a plan B here?
That yeah.
It's not useful, mum. It's like, it's not useful to say that. And I remember getting the call saying it was like the smallest part in the whole show. I don't even know that my, I think she didn't even have a name. I think we gave her a name. And I remember getting the call and literally like stripping my top off and like swinging it around the room because I was so thrilled. And then did that. And then still for ages, like didn't work. And then I went and did National Youth Theatre. And at the end of that, I was really lucky and got like the lead in one of their big shows and got a lot of agent interest, signed with who I'm still with, and then didn't work for a year and like could not get a job, couldn't get a recall, nothing. Calling them, being like, do I need to shave my head? Like, what do I need to do? And they were like, no, it's just part of being an actor. One of them, which I'll still never forget, is he just went, you just need to find a coping mechanism for being an actor.
Yeah.
And I was like,
There's no other job where it's like you're like really successful. If it's like 95% failure, you're still like known as one of the most successful.
Aha. Uh-huh. But why we do that? I don't know. Like why? I
couldn't do that.
Yeah, and just so demoralizing sometimes. But I then, within the space of like 3 weeks, I started working for National Youth Theatre as an assistant director for a summer. And I'm convinced because I had somewhere really good to go before and after auditions and was really fulfilled both sides of like not being that acting like was my whole being, I was better at auditioning. I then got this big BBC job called Broken, which is a Sean Bean, like opposite Sean Bean, and I was like so young, couldn't believe it. And then 3 weeks later I got Outlander, which was the one that kind of changed my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was, I just remember the audition process for that was mad. And then that year I did my tax return once I started Outlander, and I'd realised I'd been doing like six different jobs at once until Outlander started, and then since then I've never had to do.
And you've only got one job now.
Now I got one job. Yeah.
And I thought you were gonna get it. Since then I've never done a tax return. Can we give a little bit of backstory of what She's a Wreck? Have we spoken about that for people that may not be aware of it? The concept of it and what actually happens.
Yes.
And what it is.
So it's sort of an evolving beast. It started off because in my 20s, I realised all of my, like, taste, my cultural taste was men, came from men. And it was like, all my favourite bands were men, all my favourite films were directed by men, books, all that sort of thing. So I was like, I really want to try and be a bit better about knowing what women have influenced art and culture and things like that. And also a fiend for a recommendation. Like, I think, like, so many people just constantly asking, like, what to watch, what to listen to. So I thought, how can I combine that? I shall do it. That I'll get really, at start off, I'll get really cool women coming on speaking about the albums, films, and books by women that have most influenced their life. But now it's sort of evolved into more like I'll have guys on, people that like non identifying people talking about basically influence that isn't a dude.
Yeah. It's someone, a great thing because I think like it's so much easier to come across the male stuff a lot of the time. So it is a great way of discovering things that you
people
wouldn't necessarily
find it really
discover.
Hard. A lot of guests will like,
yeah, I bet.
Be like the films especially are really hard.
Because until you've thought about it, you probably don't really realise.
No, like, and it's like, I find myself like Googling like what films have been directed by women before to try and figure it out for for myself. But it's been really nice to discover some as well of people that have like thought about it and come up with something interesting.
Today, you're actually doing a live recording with Choose Love.
Which will be in the past when this comes out, but super interesting because we also work with Choose Love quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a nice opportunity for everyone to talk about Choose
Absolutely.
Love.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And how lovely Choose Love
are. As a charity. Yes. So what are you doing with Choose Love today?
So we're doing a live event where I'll be interviewing someone live. I'm calling it the director's uncut version, which is what they've always been. That's what I've always called them. So you can't steal that.
No, we won't. We need all the cuts we can get, so there will never be a director's uncut version.
But it all stemmed from when it was COVID. I'd done one season of She's a Wreck, and it'd done very well. And people were just asking for like more, and everyone was bored and it was locked down. And so I started doing online live events where people could watch and come on like a Zoom call basically and watch the recording of an episode and be a part of it and ask questions at the end and kind of get to know a guest in the uncut way. So Choose Love and I, we've worked together for a while on lots of different things. I kind of tentatively was like, we could do something before the end of the year. I'm sure it would be a lovely thing to do. And they came straight back with like, yuck, use 10 dates, pick one. We'll get it done.
Sometimes that's the best way, isn't it, though? Because it's like, like, all right, we're doing it.
Yeah, and actually,
got to figure it out now.
What was that? That would have been like a month to the day almost ago that we just, I first approached them about doing it.
Yeah.
So it's not, they're really on it. So I'm interviewing Wad Al-Kaib, who's a Syrian filmmaker who made a film called For Sama, which won the BAFTA in 2019 for Best Documentary. She was also nominated for an Oscar, but she literally, over the space of 5 years, recorded her life in under the Syrian regime, and she gets pregnant during it, and her, what becomes her husband, they make like a field hospital in a bit random building because he's a doctor, and you witness what they go through, and she's filming it, and she sort of talks about it being a woman's perspective of war, and it's unreal. And she, I mean, 2 years after they got out, she was at the BAFTAs.
Makes us talking about squats sound
really
weird.
Does.
I know. But I'm nervous because like she's still just a person, isn't she? Like it's such an intense thing to go through, but it's just a person.
I'm sure you're feeling nervous now because right now she's this entity.
Exactly.
Thing, but when you meet her, it'll be a lot easier.
And everyone said she's really cool. Yeah. Like lots of people have been replying to stories and stuff saying, oh, I love her, I've met her, and she's cool.
Very good. And also, She's a Wreck, to stay on that vein, first time we've ever been recommended to a client on podcast in Olivia Cook's episode where she basically says that you should train with us.
Yeah.
But she didn't actually say our names.
No,
she didn't.
She was a bit, she was sort of rude. A bit quiet about that. But I don't know,
like
I think
to be,
it was protective.
We like to be kept secret.
Yeah. You too, you talk about being kept secret. You quite like that.
Yeah, we do.
No one knows what we do.
We've also
like.
Got a podcast where we talk about what we do with it.
Bit of an oxymoron.
Yeah, it didn't take me long to figure out that you guys.
Have you found that going into becoming an interviewer is like a whole different thing? I think we spoke about it in the gym. It's part of the thing of just doing things that you don't necessarily understand or you're not good at or you've never done before. It's just a good thing
to
do. Exactly. Like it's a really, I think it's quite an important thing to do because a lot of people don't necessarily do that, especially like we see people that come in to see us in the gym who are like, I don't go to the gym, avoid that kind of thing. And they feel there's like, they're nervous about
like
coming
stigma.
In and it's trying to make exercise, which for us is like the most normal thing ever. It just happens all day, every day.
Yeah, are you ever embarrassed when you... Where are you ever at any time in your life embarrassed going to the gym?
Oh, totally.
100%.
At uni, I
still don't
like
going to big gyms.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like at uni, I would avoid going and doing anything with like the barbells because there was like the big guys.
Mm.
You don't want to be... You don't want to get the big guys like looking at it. I was a tall, skinny guy. Well, not even skinny. Just a tall, slightly fatter guy.
No, I think it's definitely like... It's definitely an intimidating place, and our whole ethos is about producing a non-intimidating place to train and also not being sergeant major to whoever we're training. It's
no,
like
not at all. When I first came down the stairs into the studio, I get what we're calling it,
the
gym.
The speakeasy.
The dungeon.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like the little signs that you've got to like find to go down. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, we did
so
make them too small. Someone told me that the other day.
I think because when we first did them, it's like, we probably had no money as well.
No,
the guy at the sticker shop went, these ones are a fiver. Yep.
If you put all the stickers together, they all fit on an A4 piece of paper. Yeah. And that was our budget.
It's like going on an Easter egg hunt, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it might have been you that was sitting behind the desk and I walked in and I was like, hi. And there was a couple of people. It was quite busy. There was like a few people kicking about. And I was like, hi, I'm here for the first time. And you were like, yeah, cool, sweet. Just come in. And I was like, cool. So where do I put my stuff? And you went, oh, mi casa es su casa. So
yeah, I'm always like, just put it wherever you want.
I literally just like dumped it in a corner.
He's always speaking Spanish. There's
no rule.
I know.
Yeah. It's weird. He's always speaking Spanish. But it was like, you were all so warm. And it was like, immediately I thought, this is different. This is cool. Whereas every gym I've ever been into, and I have to have a thing where I actively, like, we'll make sure to look around at absolutely everyone and make sure I'm like, yep, no one's actually hot. No one actually has a clue what they're doing. So that's cool. You just do your thing now. Rather, because I used to, before, I'd keep my head down and like assume that everyone around knew what they were doing. Was like,
and they were
sure,
looking at you and they
really
were judging
fit.
You.
Nah. Actually, it's not the case at all.
No one ever really knows what they're up to.
No.
Like, not just in a gym, just ever.
Yeah.
I think, like, the older you get, the more you realise, because you kind of, like, you grow up thinking, like, oh, when you get to that age, everyone knows what they're up to then. Mm. Everyone's got their shit.
Then you realise your parents haven't got a fucking clue what they're doing either. No. Like, no one knows what they're doing.
I wait for the day, though. Have you seen those videos of people in gyms where they're like swinging from side to side on a piece of equipment?
On the cable machine,
like doing
the
splits at the same time whilst wailing or something. And everyone's like, what is going on? I've not experienced that yet.
No, I'd prefer to go to a gym like that, to be honest.
Yeah. Moving into talking about the gym then, seeing as this is a health and fitness based loosely, probably most of the time, based podcast. Mm. People always sort of think talk to us about, like, why are you a gym for actors? And sort of like, we've kind of created this niche a little bit. And I think a lot of the time, our clients, such as yourself, it's almost like not even just coming in and training for a particular role, but like having a routine. And I think you spoke about it earlier, the working at the National Youth Theatre and having something to do either side of auditions to kind of give you like a sense of normality and a sense of kind of routine in the day, and how that just helps in general. Is that like, is exercise become like a day-to-day thing, or like part of your week where you're like, it gives a point of difference? It's away from work. It's something else. It's like,
definitely. Well, because you don't have any routine as an actor, it's like, it's impossible. Well, semi-impossible to have a kind of sense of that. And also when I'm working, like for Karen Perry, I trained before, like I got that. And then I was like, cool, she might do some stunts because it's a detective. So I'll need to like get ripped for doing that. So I went to a really cool gym in Glasgow that's Sam Hewins. He trains there, who's my like the main guy in Outlander. He's like my stepdad, and he was like, yeah, they're great. So me and the guy at the, my husband in Outlander, we were doing it at the time. We were both going on to other jobs. He was going on to Rogue Heroes in the desert. And so he actually had to get ripped to be a soldier. And I was like, yeah, no one has asked me to get ripped, but I'm going to do it.
Well, sometimes it just is part of kind of getting into the character, isn't
it?
A lot of people have spoken about that on this podcast, where it's not even necessarily there to look a certain way or do anything.
No.
It's more like the way the character moved, or the way they spoke, or the intensity that they do things at, like, exercise can help with that, I think.
What's funny about this character, though, is that actually in the books, she's, like, dumpy and round. And I was like, I am not doing that. She will not be dumpy and round. And also, none of that had been taken into the scripts of the series. Like, that was kind of a dated element of the books. And I went hard for, like, 2 months. Like, that gave me such a sense of routine on my days off from Outlander, going there, having a community, really cool. And then once I started working, I was in constantly, that I just did not, the only days I could like do any exercise were maybe a Saturday or a Sunday if I could be bothered, if I'd had enough sleep. Because I was just in doing like 16 hour days every day because I was leading the show. So there comes a point where it actually wasn't that, it's not almost that healthy, because you're like bouncing between two things so constantly that I think that's part of why I've come to you guys, is like learn more of a balanced way of keeping consistent.
I was going to say, that's a lot, achievable, isn't it? If you're trying to train every day and you've got a job that's physical and demanding, you and you're the kind of the key person in it, there's a lot of pressure and responsibility. And then the gym becomes more pressure and more responsibility, which it shouldn't be really. That
I do notice how good it is for my head, though. That like that 100%. Is really the kind of main one.
Yeah, that was one of the first conversations we had when you were like, I train every day normally when I'm not working. Yeah. I was like, well, don't do that.
You don't need to.
Going for a walk. Going for a walk can be one of those
days.
Yeah,
this is what these trainers, previously when I was at that gym, they were like, just like walk here, like go for a big long walk. Yeah. And I was like, really?
Yeah, 100%.
I think people undervalue it.
Active isn't coming in and doing an hour of HIIT training. Being active is just being active in general.
Yeah, it definitely comes from my background though, because my mum's a PE teacher, or what, she's retired now, PE teacher. I was a gymnast from the age of 6. Always sport in my family has been a big thing. And so like I was competing from like the age of 10 as a gymnast. And you just get in such a sense of discipline doing that. I'm so competitive as well. And that's definitely both my parents. Like there was a time when I got to New Zealand and I was at this new school, just 15, just trying to make friends. And there was I was also a cross country runner because Scotland, I love cross country. And I was
just another string casually.
This is to do with this. So in Scotland, I was a cross country runner and I competed as a cross country runner as well. It was good. When I went to New Zealand, there was the cross-country run in school, at this new school that I was going to. And my mum was like, great, I'll come and watch you. And I ended up just running at the back with like a pair of fairy wings, with like these new friends, like thrilled that I'd like made some friends, basically. Yeah. And my mum was furious. I still remember her standing watching and staring, like tutting and couldn't believe she was like, I took a day off school to come and watch you do.
And I've been training you for years.
I've been training for years,
That's what happens when you go to the drug school.
Yeah, it's the drug school.
She's been there one day, running around with wings on.
And it turns out I was high.
No. This all makes a lot of sense now, because I remember the first time I trained you, I was like, you know what you're doing. Like,
yeah,
there's like certain times you explain a movement or you just say what we're going to do and people just start doing it and you're like, oh, I can just stand there and talk. I don't really have to do anything. But it's like that was obvious with you in the gym, whether or not it was something that like if you trained for it or it's just part of your life, isn't it? Like,
having had trainers before as well, you obviously guys are my favorite, don't worry.
Oh, thank you.
but the Yeah, I have learned lots over time.
Should we go back to talk about Outlander, where you were saying you were trying to train every day and you were trying to work on this big, massive production. I think for anyone that's not seen it, it's what, like 8 seasons or something? Or nine,
Outlander.
Nine
Outlander
years,
is now 7 seasons out. I did season 3, 4, 5, 6. But it would be like on occasional days off, I'd be going to the gym. And then other than that, yeah, you're in all the time. You're in courses. I mean, that sort of thing's mad. Like you feel you have to be quite healthy because you're literally in proper courses and stuff and you're cinched in. And you kind of need to feel good doing that so you don't pass out. I was weak on Outlander. I remember like my character, she would get a lot of hand-me-downs, but the way the story kind of was, they would reuse stuff from Claire, who's this actress called Katrina Balfe, who's like 6 foot. Something, a model. We have I'm 5'4". Like we have three. I'm 5'3". And like I'm pretending I'm 5'4". And they were like, "Yeah, we've got to alter this dress." And they altered this dress to fit me, and it just did not fit properly. And I remember for the first time in it, sitting in the car on the way to set, starting to like have a bit of a panic attack and being like, I wasn't, but I was like, "Oh my god, I really can't breathe." And holy fuck, like what happens if I can't breathe? Like I could pass out, and like feeling completely trapped in this like corset that was so tight. Can't move. You can only breathe really from your chest. You can't breathe from your tummy at all. And I managed to calm myself down because I was like, "Don't pass out on your first date. That'd be so embarrassing." But also, don't panic. Like I was panicking.
Yeah.
And then I got there and I remember saying to Gosham girls, "Like, what would you do if someone passed out? Like, is that not terrible?" And she was like, "Oh no, don't worry. We would just cut you out." I was like,
"Like it's a totally normal thing."
Right. Okay.
So then I'll be passed out and naked.
Yeah.
Perfect. Really looking forward to that moment.
Was there a time where you kind of learnt like tools or little things that you add into your routine for dealing with feeling like that kind of panic or anything? Or is that something that you've not had to do?
I was like, the corset has to be looser from now.
Number one.
Yeah. And then I said, I want a zip corset So they did start doing stuff like that. I started a lot more yoga because like we went to South Africa as the second part of that. So for my first season, which is season 3, we went out to Cape Town to do like half the season, which was so good because like we haven't traveled like that since.
Yeah.
And everyone that didn't get to go was furious that like a couple of us had just joined, these like young bucks that had joined and we're like, we're going to South Africa. And we're treated like kings. And there was this amazing yoga teacher that came for Katrina sometimes, so I'd go to her, and it was just really good for your back. And you kind of do have to do stuff like that. It's a bit like sound guys or surfers. Like, my boyfriend's a surfer and he's really good at yoga because he's got to be really flexible to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And sound guys, the way that their backs have to bend
holding a boom,
like the contortionism I've seen some of them do. And I've gone up to them, they're like, bros. And you're like, so do you guys do any yoga? And they're like, yeah, yeah, I've had to start doing yoga or Pilates. And you're like, what? So you kind of come up with stuff like that. When we were doing one of the seasons, it was lockdown, so I was literally like doing home workouts, like killing myself, and I was not liking that. But it was just like we had nothing else to do, so you had to do something. I haven't worked out the balance between working and training at the same time yet.
Yeah. Maybe that's, you know, that's to come.
Yeah.
Since we've met you.
Yeah.
That's the number one take-home thing you'll get out of that.
Yeah, once I started doing Karen Perry, I think the most stunting I did was like driving a car really fast. Nice. So it didn't really work out that way, but there was just no time to exercise.
Yeah, but that's fine as well, isn't it? It's like we talked about.
Also, you've done the prep, so you're in a lot better position than you would have been if you hadn't have done it, and you've just got to live in that kind of feel good about that. Because
and
you
to be honest, you're like you're on your I'm on my feet all
the time,
so you're
anyway.
Kind of active. Yeah.
Talking about doing the prep and getting ready for things, it's just been announced your new show.
Oh yeah,
Toxic Town. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I literally can't tell you anything about it.
You can tell me who's in it. I've seen.
Oh yeah, Amy Lou Wood's in it. She's amazing. Jodie Whittaker's in it. She's amazing. Rory Kinnear, the funniest man in the world. And if you ever heard that, I'd be like, he'd be like, yeah. When I asked Rory, because I've always thought of him as like a pinnacle, like theatre actor. I thought I was going to meet like the Prime Minister.
Yeah. And also he's played the Prime Minister. Right?
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he's the guy that shagged the pig's head.
Oh, he is in the Black Mirror.
Literally, yeah, has
so
done.
He
he's
occasionally still gets people knocking on his windows of cars, being like, "You fucked a pig." he's like, "Yeah." But he is so funny and playful and silly. So for it's quite a heavy subject matter of a show. It's a really serious topic about a true story of something called the Corby poisonings, which is a sort of a horrible case that happened in the 90s and 2000s in a little Midlands town. I was about to say something that I can't say.
But you can say that, that's good. A little synopsis is great. Like,
yeah.
And also Joe Dempsey, friend of
Joe Dempsey's
friend of the podcast,
in it. He's great.
Friend of the gym.
Chatty, lovely man.
Lovely Joe.
Loves the story.
Sat down, I thought, I'm going to chat for this guy in the green room for a couple of minutes. An hour later, he was
Talk about an interviewing challenge. You set him off. You can't get a word in edgeways.
That's what you want, though, when you interview someone.
It's
great.
Yeah, it's perfect. Especially for, I mean, he sends me voice notes to our podcast.
Oh, you're saying that, like 8 minutes long.
8 to 10 minutes worth of Joe talking.
When I met him, I was like, I just find this funny that I'm meeting Joe, that I'm meeting Chris from Skins, and that the bucket for Chris, like that was the catchphrase.
Yeah,
Skins.
No,
and he said he still has people now that are excited about it. They're like teenagers now. Yeah, love the show.
Well, Skins was such a massive thing. That I think that's going to just follow those guys.
My first time I went to ever meet an agent, it was a big agent, and I was young, and I went. She was like, "So what kind of work do you want to do?" And I just was like, "Skins." Skins hadn't been a show for a couple of years.
bring it back for me.
And also famous Corby, a town that's famous for having a lot of Scottish people.
Yeah, weird.
And a very strange Scottish mixed accent.
I'm actually not doing a Scottish accent. Weirdly, I'm like one of the only Scots in it. Robert Carlyle, who plays Begbie in Trainspotting, he's in it as well, and he's phenomenal. He was like the nicest man in the world. But yeah, it's got really weird accent.
Strange accent.
I had to do
Corby.
A bit of research. I had to learn an accent in a couple of days to do it. They suddenly just were like, "Can you do this accent?" I was like, "Yeah, of course I can."
I hear that all the time.
It sounds like it's going to be great. The cast alone is amazing.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Sounds like it can't go wrong with all that.
As ever, you don't know when it's coming out, but at some point in the future.
It's made by Broken Bones, who made Black Mirror, so it'll be cool.
It'd
be cool, you know.
It'd be very, very cool. Speaking of cool, I think you told me a story when we went to the screening of Femme, Sam H. Freeman's film, who's another client, another podcast guest.
Nice name drop.
Told me a story about your dad at the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably the coolest thing.
Which one?
Well, all of it. Like, there was just so many.
So not an embarrassing story. Just
he had
cool
the time of his
story.
Life, didn't he?
My dad had the best night of his life.
Yeah.
My mum and dad, I think that was my wedding for them. Was at the BAFTAs. Like, my brothers are married, and I think that was my wedding. My dad was like, it was like he was high and he wasn't. My mum was just embarrassed that he was running around like that, but she was like secretly thrilled.
Well, you did win Scotland's favourite Scot on screen.
Yeah.
Well, if you're Scottish and your daughter wins that.
True. That's
what could
true.
Be better?
That is true. Yeah, he was pretty mega. Mate.
Was he just telling everyone? You haven't explained, like, what did he do?
I know, you've so, got to, like, tell the story.
Oh, there was just so many famous people that he went up to. So, like, the first that. Minute that I love
I hate that. If it was my dad, I'd hate it. Anyone else's dad, love it.
Yeah. And he's in his tartan trousers and a velvet jacket that he got for the occasion. His trousers are, like, our tartan trousers. So, like, and everyone was just like, his trousers are incredible.
Yeah, he looked great.
Him and my mum looked amazing. And mum kept saying, like, stop going around to everyone. But he went to the First Minister of Scotland, who, like, the Prime Minister of Scotland.
Start at the top, you know.
Dragged him over from the other side of the room and was like, my son played football with you when he was in school. And he was like, did he? Like, what's his name? His name's Callum. I don't remember him. And he was like, oh, you must. Gets a photo up of Callum and Hans is like, oh, yeah, Callum, yeah. We were like, you don't have a clue. You don't have a clue who that is. And Dad's like, anyway, okay, doesn't matter. Then goes up to Morven Christie, who's quite a well-known Scottish actress, and he was like, 25 years ago, me and you did karaoke in a bar. And she was like, I don't think that was me. And he was like, it is. My wife assures me that it was you. And she was like, I haven't been called. Like, my acting name's Morven, and I've not had it for 25 years. And he was like, you, like, saw... like the dream die. He was like, but my wife has assured me for 25 years that this has happened. And then he went up to, like, her friend and was like, you were great in the show with Morven, by the way. And he was like, not me. But I am in a band called Churches. And he was like, oh, no problem. Like, I love Churches. Makes friends with him. Graham Norton up to him. Where's my daughter coming on the show? And Graham Norton's like, oh, yes, babe, you got two. And I was like, yeah, get me on the show. And then the last one was Shirley Henderson, who's Moaning Myrtle in Harry Potter. And, like, Trainspotting, like, Scottish royalty. She came up to me without me going near her and was like, I have met your father. And I was like, why?
Did he think she was on one else? Because he just spent the whole night
going no, around. He'd be like, no, Shirley Henderson was. Okay. Then she held my face and was like, congratulations. And I was like, passing the Scottish baton.
Thanks.
He's literally done a tour of the whole room.
Yeah, whole room. Love that. Everyone. And my mum and me just sat at one point, like, looking at the two BAFTAs sitting in front of us. And we were like, what? Just having a laugh.
He's gone by this
point.
I have
no idea who he was at that point.
I love that.
No, they were thrilled.
It's not why you do it, but it's nice.
It is nice. It is very nice.
And not saying that is at all embarrassing, but it is a nice way to bleed into our embarrassing stories.
Oh.
It has to be on set or in the gym. Doesn't have to be.
We've had people on set. We've had people in auditions.
Auditions are always good.
Crushing themselves with barbells.
Yeah.
Audition stories, the only one that comes to mind that was so mortifying and it was just weird. I was, like, new to auditioning, and on a script that I got in, I was really annoyed because on the script it said, like, the character description, and it said, like, and she comes in braless, and I was like, this is so, like, objectifying of women, and I'm, like, quite young and my boobs aren't even that big, like, no one wants to see that, but, like, fine. But then I got to the audition and didn't wear a bra and walked in, and it was this, like, older woman, and it was, like, kind of her house that I was auditioning in, and she was like, hello, sweetheart, like, come in, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, okay, suddenly very nervous, okay, yes, it's just, and just before we begin, I've not worn a bra, is that fine? And she went, yeah, yes.
Sure, if that's what you like.
That's fine. And I was like, okay. And then I thought, she's no idea why I've told her that. It's not necessary. Actually, I don't think it's, like, a necessary part of the script at all. No. There's probably an amendment where, like, it doesn't say she's not braless anymore.
Yeah, yeah, they're taking it out completely.
There's no context to the scene that mentions whether or not she's wearing a bra, it's other than, like the brief of who the character was. Like, the scene, there's absolutely nothing to do with it. And so she's just like,
you've just walked into the audition and said, I'm not wearing a bra today. Is that okay with
literally,
you?
Yeah, and she was, I just remember her being like, yeah.
Absolutely fine.
I've lost me.
Why is she talking? Okay.
Did she just go, yeah, me neither?
Yeah, no. And if she had, I'd be like,
Oh, well, normally what we do is we talk about what's coming up next.
I think we could sum it up.
We've done that a little bit.
Yeah. A little bit.
We've talked through the cast of what's coming up next, but we're not allowed to tell anything else.
No.
We can say it's on
Netflix.
Netflix, yep. And it's called Toxic Town.
Yeah.
And it's coming out at some
point.
You
can Google stuff and it'll tell you what you can know.
Yeah.
I've got a film called The Outrun, which I did with Saoirse Ronan last year. It's coming out this year. It's going to Sundance.
Oh, wow.
In January. I've got another film called Something in the Water. It's a scary shark thriller from Studio Canal. We all go away for my wedding and maybe people get eaten by
I'm into it. I like the sound of it. It's actually really fun.
It's a really fun film. So that should come out next year as well.
Did you have, I remember when Kaya Scodelario was on the podcast, she did a film about a crocodile that's in a house killing people. And she was explaining how to film those scenes. She was swimming around this kind of flooded house.
Yeah.
And there was a man in green lycra.
Yeah.
With a big stick on tail, just running around
doing
after it.
Crocodile.
Did you have a shark version of that?
Yes. Literally the same.
Is there a guy? Is that a guy?
There's a guy. Yeah.
There's a guy that is all the killer animals. That's his thing. They just dress him up in lycra and they go, "You're a shark." Off
he was like a good looking, like, what was his name? Was like Francesco or something, like Spanish, Italian. Like he spoke every language and was like
even
quite
shark.
Cool. Even shark. But we, yeah. He's a cool man. But you're literally filming in a tank. We were in the Dominican Republic filming in a tank.
Amazing.
That overlooked the ocean, like it was this like infinity tank, and it's really deep at one point, so it's quite scary when you fall off the edge and you suddenly are like quite often you'll have to be doing like and you're swimming around freaking out, but there's a wave machine going at the same time, so you're being pushed out, and then all of a sudden they're like, "Guys, you've gone too far," and you're like, "Oh my god," and you're really deep.
Yeah,
and you got to swim back in. And there is a guy where for when you're being chased by sharks or shark is near, there's literally just a man in a wetsuit with a fin strapped to his back and underwater, and they called it an underwater scooter, and he'd swim around on the little jet scooter.
So much fun.
Yeah. Got weird when he started to like come up behind us a bit too often, like in between takes.
He actually
like,
thought he was a shark.
Yeah. Fully went method.
So method. Just gnawing on your car.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait to watch that knowing... That's what the shark is.
Yeah, the Finnish Francesco
with a little.
Well, I'm hoping the director, it was her first foray into directing, but she's like a big boy art director for all the Star Wars films and huge, huge movies. So like SFX wise, knows what she's doing. Yeah, so we're hoping that will be cool.
And another person for She's a Wreck.
Oh yeah, yeah, get Haley in.
Do Francesco.
Yeah. No. I love that's not his name. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's been hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for doing this. Thank you for coming on.
Not at all. I've really enjoyed myself.
Lauren Lyle, everybody.
Lauren Lyle.
Woo! Woo!